All right, Dr. Aaron Carroll is here. It is hour three of the Wednesday. He usually joins us. Last week, he canceled, so we booked Naomi Klein on the program instead. Right? Isn't that right, Aaron?
Lie. That's a terrible lie.
You didn't cancel?
You canceled on me because it was like climate change week or something.
Oh, I would never have done that. Melanie.
Yes.
Alfred.
That's on you.
This is Dr. Carroll's slot. How dare you? How dare you cancel him without my approval? I'm sorry that happened to you, sir.
No problem.
Apologize. Someone will be firmly reprimanded by the head of the Secret Service, Julia Pearson. Dr. Aaron Carroll is joining us. Let me give him some credibility. He's a pediatrician. He's got one of them MDs. You have a bachelor's as well, don't you? What's that in?
Chemistry.
He's got a chemist. Really?
Yeah, I was a chemistry.
I knew that. How come in chemistry class in high school they allow the students to handle things like hydrochloric acid? I was thinking about that the other day. And how come there's never been a case of some kid just throwing it in another kid's face? Wouldn't that
I'm
be a
sure
terrible
there
thing?
Probably has been. I mean, usually the acid they let you touch in high school isn't that bad. I mean, it'd be bad if it got in your eyes, but touching your skin probably wouldn't be that bad.
Oh, all right.
But later, holy crap, you know, by the time you get to college, you're doing everything in, like, hoods, and they're vacuuming the fumes away. It becomes a whole other thing.
You trust college students a little bit more than high school students, I
think. I don't know why. They're drunk a lot more.
That's a good point. He's a professor of pediatrics, director of the Center for Health Policy Professionalism Research at Indiana University. He's got three great books. Just redid my bookcase, and I put all your books together.
Ooh, thank you.
Don't Swallow Your Gum, Don't Cross Your Eyes, and Don't Put That in There. And that launched was the beginning of the myth-busting and the debunking. I think his YouTube videos, which are very popular, and produced by John Green. Yeah, the guy who did The Fault of My Stars, that guy, big YouTube star, discovered Dr. Aaron Carroll, and he now does healthcare triage, and there's a lot of really good ones, recent ones, fluoride in the water, shrooms and smoking, comma, adult drug abuse, and Ebola. You just threw in Ebola at the end there?
I was coming back to it because I'd done a piece, so I'm actually pressing it at this moment. I'd done a piece like a couple weeks ago where I was just, you know, it was just one of those where, you know, everybody was panicking about Ebola was going to, you know, destroy the United States. And so I was saying, like, at that time, like, this is not a reason for the United States to panic. And I was trying to make the point of, like, you know, that the United States could handle Ebola if it came here, as we're about to watch. But we shouldn't panic about it. There's many, many more things that are more dangerous. But I sort of felt bad because I wanted to actually add on a piece just saying, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't be upset for the rest of the world, because it is a horrible tragedy in West Africa, and they absolutely should be panicked, and we should be panicked for them, and that we need to, you know, recognize that we need to help mobilize to get everything done to improve the situation over there. So I wanted to add on that we should stop panicking about it here doesn't mean that we should stop caring or worrying about it over there. So that was, I just did a quick piece adding that on.
So yesterday you heard from the head of the CDC. We played that earlier. And I mean, you're basically, this is not even something that you are thinking about, because what are some of the reasons why the United States can handle Ebola versus these West African nations better, so much better, that it's of no concern to health professionals?
I mean, of course, you never want to say no concern, because it is a concern. It's just that, you know, there are things, you know, it's concern because it's terribly dangerous and it's terribly tragic for the patient who has it, and it's horrible.
All right, but you're just covering your bases as a doctor. Obviously,
no,
there's
no,
concern.
No.
I was being flip.
Okay, yeah, but I'm saying, no, not even that I'm covering my bases on purpose, but it's also, they need to be concerned and contain it, because it is a horrible illness that could get out if not properly maintained.
But that hospital...
Yes.
I just read that hospital, the spokesman came out and said, we and every other hospital apparently in the United States are equipped with this.
Ebola is not like super easily transferred. Like, you have to come into contact with like bodily fluids, like blood or vomit, or, you know, you have to touch the body or the fluids in order to get it. So it is not one of those where it's like, oh, my God, I was on a plane with the guy, or I was in the room, or some of that. So it is. It's not that easy to transfer it compared to other viruses. The second thing that makes Ebola a little bit simpler is that you're only contagious once you get sick. So it's not one of those where people are not worried that for the last 21 days or whatever, this guy's been giving out Ebola all over the place. He's only been contagious since he got sick. And usually when people get sick, they're not usually walking sick like with Ebola.
He was at his he's here visiting family, and he was at their house.
And so but that's the thing. So when he got sick, he became contagious. Well, what the CDC will do immediately, and we have the resources to do, is identify everyone he might have come into contact with while he's been sick, and they will watch them closely. And they're not contagious until they get sick. So, you know, if they quarantine them now or they start watching them now, they're not contagious at this moment. So
perhaps I'm mistaken, sir, but I read that this gentleman went to the hospital exhibiting symptoms. They sent him home, and he went back maybe 2 days later, and
right.
That's when they...
So, but in other words, they will...
How do they not recognize a West African man with the fever symptoms?
That's a great question. I don't know. I mean, it's like if he had been traveling and he had the fever symptoms, I don't know.
I mean, is there a memo that everybody gets that if we have to ask if it's not insinuated by their accent
I'm absolutely positive.
Have you been to West Africa lately? Anybody comes into it?
You know what? I was actually being a little bit, you know, I was almost profiling in my head, and that's not the thing. Here's the thing. Every person that comes in with fever right now to a hospital in the United States is not being asked, have you traveled to Africa lately? I doubt that.
Why not? Or were you on a plane with anybody who had, you know, I mean, you could be.
You know what? Because at this point, it's a low threshold, and you have, there's always the opportunity cost. Any time you spend asking a question like that, you might not be asking a question that might be much, much, much more likely to be true. I guarantee you now they will be asking that question more. But, you know, in the same way that do we still ask about SARS? Do we ask about influenza? Do we ask about – it's like there's lots and lots of diseases. Look, influenza is going to kill thousands of people in the United States this year. It's going to, period. Will happen. And yet we don't go panicked over that. And influenza is much easier to catch than Ebola is. The thing about Ebola is that you need to have the resources to quarantine, to do the investigations, to sort of lock it down, and to protect everything. A lot of hospitals in West Africa, unfortunately, don't have those basics. They don't have the sterilization techniques. They don't have the quarantine wards. They don't have, you know, the ability to constantly keep everything clean and washed and recycled and all done so that all the healthcare providers are safe. And that's how it often gets transmitted. It's the people caring for the people with Ebola who get the Ebola because they come into contact with bodily fluids. In the United States, we are very, very good at those things. And so
So anybody that is going to come in contact with this guy who's quarantined in this Texas hospital.
Face suit, I bet. I mean, I'm sure they're going to be way suited up. Just, it's probably even overkill, but I'm sure that they're good. Because again, when they go to West Africa to care for people, they don't get the space suits and everything else. But I'm sure
they have a space suit.
I'm making a little bit of a facetious joke there, but I bet it will be like complete. You know, they will be in full out quarantine mode. So
did you see Lego Movie?
Say it again.
Did you see Lego Movie?
I have not, but I just got it on Netflix, so it's sort of in the queue and it's here. I haven't seen it yet though.
I started watching it with my daughter. It's pretty good.
Those, you know, the Lego video games are actually also very cute and very good. So I wouldn't be surprised. They seem to know what
it's doing. There's a lot of jokes written for the adult viewer.
Yeah, same way with all the video games too. They're very, they do Lego Batman and Lego Superman and Lego, you know, they do all kinds of stuff. It's pretty cool.
Dr. Carroll is a huge Lego enthusiast and comic book enthusiast, and Batman makes an appearance in a Lego Movie. I just assumed that you were there in line opening night.
No, you know, at this point, it's like my kids are sort of too old to want to see that in the theater. And so unless they were pushing me, no, I wouldn't see that in the theater, no.
But if anybody has any Ebola questions or comments, then you can call. I'd like to move on.
You can do whatever you like. It's your show.
Ebola, when will you get it? Coming up next.
Well, that's the media. I mean, that's the thing, the scare tactics. It's like
Ebola, what you need to know without Aaron Carroll. Now here's Sanjay Gupta.
Right. Well, what bothers me is that you know, we will freak out over this like it is the end of the world, and unless something goes terribly, terribly, terribly wrong, and it should not, you know, we will contain this and it will be fine, and we will continue to go about our business. But I will be continually inundated by people who will blow off the flu shot when thousands of people will die of influenza this year.
The flu shot doesn't guarantee that you don't get influenza.
No, but But so what? It's like that's a risk. That's a much.
Well,
bigger
not risk so than what. There's the things in those shots, including the flu. A lot of people don't want to get it.
That's just not. First of all, it's dead virus in the shot. Virus doesn't.
Dead virus and other chemicals that I don't need in my body.
To life. Things do not resurrect in this world. It just doesn't. So it's like that doesn't.
Just like a Jewish doctor to say.
Well,
how
okay.
dare you, unless, sir?
Well, now I think it's more sacrilegious to think that the flu shot is the equivalent. The flu virus is the equivalent of Jesus. But you can say that.
Oh!
They're not. They're not coming back to life. They're not. They're dead, dead, dead viruses in the flu shot. They cannot give you the flu.
All right. So if anybody has a question about Ebola or the flu shot, did you do a healthcare triage video on the flu shot?
Amazingly enough, I wrote the script. We're taping this morning, so it'll be taped this morning.
When should people start getting their flu shots?
I think it's already begun. I've been giving them out to kids already.
You can get them at the drugstore, can't you?
You can get them almost anywhere. Well, the problem these days is they always seem to be running out of shortages because, thankfully, lots of people get them. But you can get them almost anywhere these days, yeah.
Some pediatricians don't give it to their patients.
Why?
I don't know.
Well, I don't. I mean, I hope they have a good reason. I mean, some won't give it because they'll claim that they can't get reimbursed and all that stuff. But these days, I think insurance pretty much covers the flu shot. So I would love to hear if doctors are actually not giving it out for that reason. But we give out the flu shot to I give out the flu shot to anybody that walks in the door for any reason, pretty much.
Mario in New Jersey, you're on Stand Up.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
So, is Ebola actually as dangerous as everyone's saying in the sense that is it just the infrastructure, being that in Africa, malaria, dysentery, even diarrhea are incredibly deadly, whereas here it's nothing? And it's
I wouldn't say nothing, because, of course, you never want to minimize it to the point. It's nothing as long as we take it seriously and do the right things.
Right.
So it is nothing, and as long as sort of everything goes according to plan. So it is because it is not easily caught, like contagious-wise, can be contained with good precautions. That's what makes it okay. The nightmare scenario is, of course, something like, Spanish flu comes back, because influenza is incredibly contagious. People are infectious before they are ill. That's the nightmare scenario. Not a disease where it's hard to get, and you know that people aren't contagious until you know when they're contagious. So,
if it was happening here,
right.
What do you think the mortality rate would actually be if we took it seriously?
Oh, okay. So the problem is okay. So that's another great question. So in Africa, the mortality rate from Ebola, depending on the strain and how bad it is, can get it pretty high, like 80% or 90%.
Right.
But a lot of that is because they can't often do a lot of the supportive care that's necessary to try to maintain people while they're super duper sick and they're bleeding. When they transfer patients from Africa, and in the past they've done it to Germany, and now we've done it in the United States, the mortality rate is lower. Like, it can be 50% or even less because we can keep people alive better than they can in Africa. It's why they brought the people. And when everyone was panicking, they shouldn't bring the people home. No, they should. We can do a better job of keeping people alive than they can in developed nations where they don't have developing nations, I should say, where they don't have the resources necessarily. And so we don't really know what the mortality rate would be in the United States because we've had only a couple patients come back. But, I don't think any of the patients we've brought back have died yet, have they? Have I missed that?
No, none. Zero.
None. So, at this point, mortality. No one's died of Ebola who's been brought back to the United States. It may be that the mortality rate with proper support and care and focus is much, much less than you would see in Africa. But even if it was 10%, that's a lot. A virus that kills 10% of people is huge.
Yeah.
And so we certainly would still consider that to be really, really dangerous. But it's not, the problem in Africa is that, it's a death sentence almost, just because without the proper care and the proper maintenance and the proper quarantining, it is very, very dangerous in Africa. It is a huge problem. We need to get sort of a worldwide focus to contain this because if we don't, it absolutely could spiral out of control in West Africa and then become a problem for the rest of the world because of flights and quarantines and everything else. But it is not the same kind of risk here that it is there.
I guess my real question is, should I stock up on milk or no?
Oh, you're killing me, man.
Oh.
Yes, yes, as much as you possibly can, and then it'll all go bad and you'll lose all your money.
Oh, that was an inside joke because Dr. Carroll's not a big milk guy. Thank you, Marianne.
That's just not true. I love milk. What else are you going to put in cereal? What else are you going to have with hot apple pie? But it's just a complimentary, enjoyable beverage. It is not a necessity of life.
Jason in D.C., you're on with Dr. Aaron Carroll, who is on Twitter. I'm sorry for not plugging it. At Aaron E. Carroll, two R's, two L's. Let's get some new followers today, folks. He's very kind to join us. Go ahead, Jason.
Hey, I heard there's an order in for about 160,000 of these suits that was reported earlier this week. My question is, you know, what is the definition of where you personally would tell your wife or family, like, we got to get out of here or something like that?
For they always,
I'm always, yeah, for, yeah. And the idea being is...
I almost would. In fact, my threshold, first of all, even in the nightmare scenario, I think my threshold would be more for just staying in the house than for going out. Because, again, as long as no one is sick, no one is contagious, and you know, you would stay there. I don't even know. I would have
this. What part do you think we would get to panic if how many cases in the United States gets to the point where it actually starts adversely affecting the economy?
Well, the problem with the United States and the media is I think one case could adversely affect the economy. It's going to get hyped up so badly that I would not be surprised if you know, people start panicking. On the other hand, it might be awesome for the economy because maybe it'll cause like a rush at the supermarkets and the economy will get a boost because all the preppers will be sure that the end days are coming. So I think you would have to get much further.
Just take a guess.
It would start to need to overwhelm the cases in there. It's hard. It would have to be huge. Again, because it's like even if more cases show up, this, again, is the kind of thing where it's like if they said, okay, you know what we're going to do is like everybody just needs to start, you know, be staying at home and we need to report every illness who's sick, you could quickly stop it from spreading because no one who is well is contagious. And when you're sick from Ebola, it's not subtle. This is not
Jason, what's your
sniffles?
What's your game theory here? What are you trying to – like? Let me just say – hold on. Yeah. It sounds – I'm sure this is not true. It sounds like you're saying when should I or when should the public be scared? And it's almost like, you know, I get spiritual on you, but the whole fear thing. I mean –
I don't know because I've actually been confronted with this question a lot, and I'm getting it a lot on Twitter right now where people are – I think some people are actually – you know, there is a general – some people have a general distrust of government, and some people have had – you know, have a general distrust of what they hear. And part of it is that, you know, a lot of this is probability. And it's like, so when I have said many, many, many times, like, it is very unlikely that an Ebola case would make it to the United States for all the reasons I just said, that, you know, somebody would have to travel in the window. They'd have to, first of all, be exposed to someone with Ebola, and then they would have to, when they were sick, and then they would have to sort of ignore precautions and then get on a plane in the window while they're well and then show up in the United States. So it's like a number of things. And it was a low probability. And so many people, including me, were like, well, it's just really, 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 it's unlikely to happen. But it did, of course, because that's probability. But that doesn't mean that, you know, your probabilities of everything else go out the window. The probabilities of the next step are still absolutely exactly the same. And those the probability of this getting out of hand is incredibly unlikely.
Well, that was a big incredibly.
Really,
Dr. Carroll
uses
that tone sparingly.
The CDC is all over this. They're not going to ignore it. They're investigating everyone this touch. They're going to be watching them all like hawks. Maybe someone that he came into contact with will turn out, you know, to have gotten ill because he went home from the hospital, but they will quarantine that person.
They're going
to
be watching them.
And they'll catch this.
I'm too late for my joke. Is when it comes to the government telling you the truth about things, this is the same government that couldn't tell you that a person broke into the White House and got as far as they did up until recently.
Totally, and that, I get that, and that's why I would say I would listen to many things. But it's like I'm not the government. I get no benefit from the government with respect to any of this. I'm telling you the principles about disease transmission and how these things work. There's a reason Ebola has stayed in Africa and only Africa, because it's just not that easy. This isn't like SARS or even which still stayed in China. Or, you know, remember that disease, I wish I could remember, Hanto virus or whatever it was killing people in the Middle East, and then cases appeared in Indiana and everyone started to freak out, and now it's gone. They contained it. And that was more...
So we have a lot of success containing diseases.
This is what the CDC does. This is their bread and butter. They're not.
Jason, do you trust the CDC?
Scientists. scientists and doctors.
I actually think that right now there is a, you know, all I know is this. Obama sent 1,600 troops to go fight ISIS, and he's going to send 3,000 to go after this. So I think the government's kind of trying to downplay a lot of what's really going on. And remember,
3,000 where? In West Africa, you're saying?
I don't know what their whole point. The president said.
No, but you're not thinking he's sending 3,000 to Texas. He's sending them to Africa, right?
Yeah, but that's what I'm talking about.
But you know why? Because this is a humanitarian crisis that, if not contained in Africa, will kill millions and millions of people in Africa. There's no question. It's starting to look bad in Africa, and if we don't, if the rest of the world doesn't intervene, that's going to happen. And I believe that's going to happen with a much higher likelihood than any of our nightmare scenarios about how ISIS could hurt us here. ISIS is not going to do that kind of damage here, like any time in the near future. Mm. They're in mountains, they are people, and they are contained, you know, in the Middle East. This, on the other hand, without question, is killing thousands of innocent people, you know, right now, and without containment, is going to absolutely spread in the same way that the same principles, which let me tell you, it probably won't spread here, will tell you it absolutely will spread there, because they can't do the containment and the education and the door-to-door, resourcing and the making sure that people stay quarantined and the making sure that, you know, people get the support that they need and the identification of who is ill, and they can't do that there. There's a huge,
You're being very thorough.
Going to fall apart there.
We appreciate Jason. Thank you, Dr. Carroll's thoroughness. But there's so many people calling in on this right now.
That's because this is what everybody's worried about. Just not you and me, I guess.
You and I are not worried about it, but everybody
else. I don't know. Maybe you are. I'm not.
Oh.
I have plenty of things to worry about.
Next week, Dr. Carroll will be in New York, and on Monday, he'll sit in on the entire program with me. I'll be here. But I wish you could see the phones right now.
No, let's talk. It's fine.
And see who's on them. I don't even know which ones to take. But Donald is calling from Alberta, which doesn't help his cause, but we do love Canadians.
Oh, listen to you.
Hey. Ebola and appendix is what it says. So you're not supposed to give away what the caller's calling in for. Sorry, that's bad radio. Go ahead, Donald.
Hey,
unveil your concern.
Yeah, well, I'm not concerned, but I did read just two conflicting articles about how much Ebola is mutating.
Right.
The tests they're doing in the mutations. So I was
but it really hasn't. This is one of those things. Ebola's been around since, like, the 60s or the 70s, and it has mutated very little since then. As viruses go, it is one of the ones that has not seemed to mutate very much. So we're very lucky in that this virus traditionally hasn't been one of the ones that tends to mutate a bit. The virus that's infecting people today is still very much similar to the virus that has existed for decades.
Donald, that makes me feel better. You?
Well, I wasn't really. I mean, I didn't feel bad, but just
I know.
Donald,
are you wearing a spacesuit right now?
No.
To protect
I'm
yourself.
I'm actually driving pantless.
Oh.
It doesn't work. So.
Send a please tweet out an image, and I will send it along to everybody.
Oh, I'll put it on Tumblr.
Oh, all right. Well, all right. I don't know why he would go to Tumblr, Aaron. Pete in New York, you're on Stand Up with Dr. Aaron Carroll. He's on Twitter at Aaron E. Carroll. Go ahead, Pete.
I think it's actually.
What's that?
It's Keith in New York.
Oh, shit. Oh, yeah. I never would have taken you.
So I'll tell your new people they got to listen more carefully.
There you go.
How dare me.
So I had a question regarding HIPAA. I mean, I don't even know if it's worth doing, but would they be able to go take this guy's picture and slap it up on a screen and say, have you been coughed on by this guy? You know, you might want to seek help, or do they get constrained by...
How would you remember who coughed on you?
Well, I think it wouldn't be the cough...
I don't know.
You know what? I'm going to guess the answer to that is that they're...
Did this guy get any of his fluids on you? Like, oh, my God, that's my gym teacher.
Even coughing, I'm not sure, would do it. Like, you really need to get fluids. It's not like influenza. It would need to be like someone... That's why, again, this usually is transmitted to people who are caring for people with Ebola, not I walked down
answer
the street.
Answer his insane ethical question.
I think I got to believe that somewhere in the HIPAA guidelines, there are, like, security issues like this that violate it. I mean, we have mandatory reporting already of many communicable diseases, a lot of STIs.
Hey, Keith wasn't saying that that's a shaming thing, I know, but it made me think of...
No, not at all. When I say mandatory reporting of communicable diseases, it's not because it's shaming. It's because they sometimes have to do investigations of certain diseases to track them down.
Yeah.
So there are times when, public interest definitely trumps HIPAA already, and the ability to just share data. Plus, I imagine that I got to believe that there are laws and things in place and regulations for exactly this purpose. Having said that, I don't think they're going to do that because that will probably cause more panic than it would actually, do good. Because, again, with Ebola, you don't have the sniffles. You're sick. This guy didn't, go probably wandering around to work after, he was doing this. He was sick. It's very likely the people they need to be concerned about are the family members he was visiting, maybe a cab driver, theoretically, if he took... No, but then he wouldn't even get the fluids on him. But even if it did, again, that cab driver's not transmitting Ebola right now.
What if he urinated on the cab driver?
Then possibly that cab driver could have Ebola. But I want to stress again, the cab driver is no risk to anyone because it will take, I think weeks probably, until he is contagious, and they would lock him down or watch him and make sure that the second he gets sick, boom, he's in isolation. He's not a danger. This is not a disease where anyone that this guy has come into contact with is contagious right now.
Yeah, handshake? Can you get it through a handshake?
If the guy had, vomited on his hand and then shook your hand with the vomit on it, it is possible he could transmit Ebola to you.
Brad.
But again, that person's not contagious right now. So that's why this is not, panic-inducing.
In Montana, it's Brad you're on with, at Aaron E. Carroll on
Twitter. Hey, I'm not even worried about the Ebola. You mentioned hantavirus. That's been around in the States since the 40s because the Japanese developed it. You get it from mouse droppings in their nest, and that acts like the flu, and the doctors misdiagnose it half the time, and by the time they figure out it's hantavirus, then you're dead.
What was it, was it hantavirus? Because I can't, this is where I'm like, it's already passed from the news and I've forgotten. What was the virus that was big in the Middle East that was killing people in Saudi Arabia and then it made it to Indiana? Was that hantavirus?
I think it was hantavirus because I thought, oh, wow, they got that shit over there too.
Okay, well, maybe it was.
Are you doing the search right now or should I?
I just looked it up. I am. It's MERS. It's Middle East Respiratory Syndrome Coronavirus. So it wasn't hantavirus. It was a coronavirus.
Oh, okay, yeah, because hantavirus is a thankful gift we got from the Japanese.
Not hantavirus. It was a coronavirus. But again, made it to the United States in May. Big news. It was the CDC announced the first case, and everybody panicked. Did I even field a phone call from you at that point? I can't remember, Pete. Who's talking about it? Who's talking about it now? Nobody.
Did I even field a phone call from you, Pete? I can't recall. What's that, Brad?
That's why I just don't go talk to people in person. And you Clorox the mouse pile.
Mm. Okay.
All right. Good luck with that. Zigamundo, Pennsylvania.
I'm going to change my Twitter name officially.
Not Zigamundo. Why would you? How do we mess that up? It says on the John and PA is.
Always.
You're not boring. Always. You should have a nickname, too.
I should. Well, first of all, you've made my day because you got a Canadian to say the word about. That was awesome.
Well, that's easy.
Yeah,
Phone them.
Yeah. So for Dr. Carroll, good morning. At what point does this shit turn to World War Z? Right.
It won't, because again, it's the nightmare scenario. The thing that made World War Z and the zombie epidemic and everything else
is Brad Pitt.
What makes it panic inducing is it's so easily transmitted.
Right.
If all the zombie had to do was bite you, and the zombie was working really hard to bite you, you should be in a panic. That's oh my God, instantaneous transmission, 100%, death rate. And, it could easily go. But the same principles applied. You knew immediately, and there was a very short, the thing that made it good, there was a very short window, but everybody was infectious forever. This is not like that. Again, the people they come into contact with are not an immediate danger. There is a nice window that you can watch people.
Sorry to cut you. So real quick, I do remember in the late 80s, what is it, early 90s, in Reston, Virginia.
Back to the Future. It's going to reference another movie.
No. Well, the book about it was Hot Zone.
Oh, yeah.
by Preston. But, I mean, we had one of the largest stockpiles of the Ebola virus in the States, as well as anthrax and, you know, God knows what other biologicals had broken out before. But ultimately, that broke out and did contaminate a city or a town or whatever the case may be in the States, and people don't remember that.
No.
So, I mean...
Well, again, it's like what's scary about...
Now, watch Dr. Carroll deny that ever occurred because he's part of the conspiracy.
The thing that makes people panicked about infectious diseases is the window during which people are contagious, but we have no idea. That's the panic. Because if people are walking around and they're giving the illness to other people and we can't tell, that's scary. What makes Ebola less scary is that window is not really there. People are contagious when they're ill. So it is not like you have to look around and be like, who could possibly have this disease right now? They have Ebola. They're ill.
Yeah.
And so it's not like the big fear thing that everybody is worried about.
No, I'm more scared of the stuff I pick up for my kids at daycare, honestly.
Yeah. What if
that shit travels super fast?
Flu will kill thousands of people in the United States this year. It will cause hundreds of thousands of hospitalizations. It's going to be massive, and no one cares.
All right. Well, I care, doctor.
Well, okay. I should say lots and
John
lots
cares.
Of people don't
I care.
No, but it won't make the news. No one will be like, no one will have the death toll from influenza running on the news this year. No one will be like... Another person died of influenza in Texas. It's never going to happen. It never does.
Well, no, but they overplay the story every year, so people just become desensitized. And
like,
oh, well, you didn't get a shot? You're bad.
How about this comment? Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
No problem, bud.
I want to move on from Ebola.
Good luck.
And I got a doctor posted this article. He's a pediatrician. He says, here's another article from the New York Times that explains the squeeze pediatricians are in between the ever-rising costs imposed by vaccine manufacturers and the dwindling reimbursements paid by insurers. Shouldering the financial risk of providing vaccines should not be the responsibility of individual pediatricians,
totally
but it
agree.
Is. It's
I totally
Big Pharma's
agree.
Lobby is too strong to allow a change in the status quo.
It's easy to say that the lobbies are too powerful. I would say if the lobbies are too powerful, they never would have passed the Affordable Care Act, and they certainly pulled that off. But I do absolutely agree it's ridiculous to sort of put the financial burden on, like, individual physicians. It should be a no-brainer. Anything that the CDC says everybody should get should be paid for. Because otherwise, what's the point of recommending? You expect people to just come up with that? It's like anything that the government says everybody should have this should be just covered.
Talking to Dr. Aaron Carroll, and we will continue our conversation when we come back from a quick break. Lots more questions to come. You can check out his blog, The Incidental Economist. He writes for the New York Times now. I didn't mention that at the beginning. So many credits, so much credibility, so little time. And we'll come back with the rest of your phone calls. Anything on health insurance or health policy or Ebola or vaccines or anything. We always have a conversation about it here. It's very important. We've got one of the best experts in the country joining us almost every Wednesday. 866-994-6343. What you need to know about things that will kill you when we return.
Important issues that affect you, your family, and your community. Stand Up with Pete Dominic.
All right, and we're back. Third hour of our program on Wednesday. We generally welcome our guest, Dr. Aaron Carroll. Today's no exception. He'll be in New York on Monday, and he'll be co-host of the show with me, sitting in the whole time. And I waited till now because I knew we'd have more listeners to make sure that everybody knew that Dr. Carroll was born this day 52 years ago.
Ah, that's so not true. Liar.
Happy birthday to you!
Not 52. That's like 5 years younger than Siegel.
Oh, wow. Wow, you guys both taking shots at each other when the other one isn't there, and I love it, and
I would take a shot. I would take that shot if he was on right now.
Oh, well, of course you would. I know you would. You guys got to come back on. We have to. Maybe we can have him on a Monday. I think he's on this Friday.
Younger than 52.
How old are you today?
42.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
What do you think of birthdays?
I actually like birthdays. I'm not going to argue. I mean, I'm not going to deny it. I do enjoy my birthday.
Why?
I don't even have a good
What do you do? Do you have any traditions?
Like, you know, we wake the kids, give me cards. No, I don't really have any traditions. I can't really say. You know, Amy and I usually around this time of year, we come to New York. I guess that's a tradition. We're almost always.
So, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Carroll joins us every week. He loves his birthday. He's not afraid to admit it.
Nope.
You can tweet him right now a happy birthday at Aaron E. Carroll. You don't add listeners to, like, Facebook, do you?
Yeah, but, you know, I'll be honest with you. I don't go on Facebook that often. So, like, once a week or so, I'll go and add all the people that have asked. But I'm not nearly as active on Facebook as I am on Twitter. Not even close. So if you want to actually follow me and get an interaction, it is definitely going to be on Twitter.
My wife wrote this about her birthday, which is 2 days before yours, September 29th. She said, there's something special that happens on birthdays, something that doesn't happen any other day. It's the date on the calendar that's held in reverence. It's your day, your number, your month. Since your earliest memory, before you even understood the value of numbers, you knew the numbers that stood for your birthday. Dear September 29th, I've been honoring you for 39 years. Thank you for reminding me to celebrate life, to celebrate with humility, gratitude, love, and grace. I look forward to honoring you for many more years. Even as my skin sags with age, my hair lightens in all different shades of gray, my back curves and knees wobble, I'll be thinking of the day I was born, making my way from the womb to earth. A big thanks. Isn't that nice?
That's very nice.
I wanted to read that yesterday, but I decided to read it on your birthday.
What?
Forgot to read that yesterday.
Why didn't I actually read it on her birthday?
Had to crow that bar in. That's a great question. That's a fantastic question. Why I didn't read that on her. I didn't see it because I, too, don't go on Facebook.
Hmm.
And I didn't know that my wife had written that until the day after. But it's Aaron Carroll's birthday. You can wish him a happy birthday. Surprising that my team hasn't grabbed the microphone to say anything.
No, they don't care
about
me.
But we'll move on. All right. That's fine.
I'll be, like, glaring at them next week.
All right. Yo, that's funny. You will be in studio all day on Monday.
I'm going to do my best, yes.
And it'll be awkward because they didn't wish you a happy birthday on the air.
Damn straight. I remember
these things.
No, we can't.
It wouldn't be funny if we did now.
Yeah, that's right.
But nor would it be meaningful.
overuse of antibiotics. You're blogging about it. There was an editorial in the New York Times yesterday, and I even used it as something we should be far more worried about than ISIS yesterday. Mm-hmm. But maybe that was a bridge too far. What are you writing about now and why?
Well, there was a nice little study in JAMA. I mean, not that you need an excuse to talk about this topic, but there was a nice little study in JAMA Pediatrics where they looked at so sore throat, incredibly common in kids. You know, whether you call it pharyngitis or whether you just call it a sore throat. They looked at the number. So they used data to go back and say how many pediatric office visits were there over a long period for strep throat. And it came out to, like, you know, there's like 200 visits for every 1,000 kids. So that basically means, you know, 2% of kids, like every, I'm sorry, 20% of kids every year are going for a visit to the doctor for a sore throat. So it's very, very common. And everybody, of course, is always worried, over worried if you ask me, but worried about strep throat. That's what everybody's panicked about. But only about a third of sore throats are caused by strep throat. The other two thirds are like viruses, and there's nothing to do for them. So at maximum, you know, one third of kids should be getting antibiotics. And if they do get antibiotics, it should be like penicillin, because straight up regular old penicillin still works for group A strep. It does not have resistance. So it's just,
well, I mean, what else would they get? I didn't get penicillin because my mom's allergic to it. So I got,
well,
I feel
if
like,
you're allergic to it, that's fine. But something
I'm,
like 10%
not, but,
or less of the population. So maybe you could say 10% of people should not get penicillin. Maybe.
Let me just understand what you're saying. Yeah. You're saying we understand this issue that antibiotics are overused in humans and in animals, and it's creating immunity issues, right? Immunity,
well,
is that
causing
word?
Resistance in bacteria,
right?
Because we're giving like sort of too much, and we're exposing them
to
too many. So you should use always like the least powerful, the least broad spectrum antibiotic that you can for the virus. There are a ton of things these days that penicillin doesn't work for anymore, but group A strep, it's awesome. Penicillin is still great. But what the study showed, first of all, was that like 60% of the kids got a prescription for antibiotics. So right off the bat, way more kids are getting prescriptions than needed. And you could even make an argument that, you know, treating all group A strep is probably overkill anyway. But way more kids are getting prescriptions. And then there's been a trend to the point where these days only like 50% of those prescriptions are for penicillin, meaning that not only are we over-treating with antibiotics, we're over-treating with the antibiotics we choose, even when we choose to over-treat the disease. So on all the metrics, we're just doing too much. We're giving.
What are the reasons? I know parents are demanding it, right?
No, but see, that's the thing. It's like that's a meme. You know, that's a study. That's what doctors and people say all the time. But there have been very good studies which show that doctors overestimate the extent to which patients are demanding antibiotics. That if you ask doctors like the percentage of people how likely certain patients are to want an antibiotic, they believe that the patient wants the antibiotic more than the patient actually wants the antibiotic. To continue to blame this on patients and say that all patients are demanding it is not quite true. And while I'm sure there are patients that demand it, you still have the ability to say no. If a patient walked in the door and said, I want an amputation, you would say no. If they said, I want chemo, just for the hell of it, in case I have cancer, you'd say no. And in the case of this person does not have strep throat, you should not be giving out a prescription for antibiotics.
I want to talk to you about the Affordable Care Act for a moment. And I know that you don't love as much. I mean, I know you love to talk about politics, but I know that you always shy away from it because that's your policy guy. But when we talk about the policies that the Affordable Care Act created and talked about, you know, as you observed, all of the concerns that were raised by any of its critics, do you think, and I know you said before that we need a long time to evaluate, but how long has it been to evaluate whether or not the Affordable Care Act has turned out to be wildly overcaught, you know, too much money. It's killed people. It's ruined the private insurance industry. Didn't we see new statistics last week about the private insurance industry and
yes.
that more and more insurers are getting involved?
Well, so again, it depends on what metric you want to call success.
Well, let's say the government takeover of healthcare.
Well, that hasn't happened, but people just say it hasn't happened yet. So, you know, what are you going to do?
But I mean, the argument, if you take it to the next page, is the Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, will destroy the private insurance industry. Now, we know that's not true because the private insurance industry lobbied for the law. But if that doesn't convince people enough,
what do we know
about their involvement now?
So a lot, you know, so it's been a success, absolutely, in terms of like not being the nightmare scenario that everybody predicted. So people said no one will sign up. That isn't true. You know, pretty much they nailed their projections, if not more. Then everybody said, oh, but nobody will pay for their insurance. Well, that wasn't true. It's something like 90% of people paid for their insurance, which is quite consistent with what we've seen always. And then people said, oh, but it's going to cause, you know, premiums to go skyrocket every year, and then everything will be terrible. And then it turned out that, you know, the cheapest plan on which the subsidies are based has remained quite stable and, in fact, went up much less than healthcare insurance premiums have gone up traditionally in the past. And everyone said, oh, well, none of the insurers are going to enter the market. They're all going to bail. And then it turned out, actually, in lots and if not many states, more insurance companies are offering products in the exchanges. So on
how about this one? I got one more.
What was that?
I got one more. One more, which is what's a very effective talking point in 30-second ads, is that it would kill jobs. Small employers, small businesses having to insure their employees and so on. I mean, that's an economist question, but I mean.
But most economists never use the term, I would say, kill jobs, because again, all of those predictions were about the labor force and people mostly voluntarily entering or exiting the labor force. In other words, I might be 64 and want to retire, but I can't because I need my insurance to Medicare because I can't buy insurance, and now that I can, I'm going to retire early. Or I'd love to stay at home and take care of my kids.
And those jobs opened up for other people, didn't they?
Right. You can probably find an economist, but I think most economists that I read did not call it job killing. They worried about its effects on the labor market and whether it was a good thing that it was getting people to exit the labor market.
But you heard from a lot of small business owners that had a tremendous amount of concern about their costs.
Those almost always track with people's political affiliation. And, you know, there are small business owners who are – and there are business owners who are blown away who hate the employer penalty. And as I've spoken about many times on the show, I tend to agree with a lot of them. I think it has weird incentives to try to hire people part-time, and it seems like it's punishing businesses in some ways. And I don't believe that insurance should be tied to employment. That just makes no sense. That's a United States thing. It's weird. But I think some small business owners have legitimate gripes. But again, no, none of the nightmare scenarios have turned out to be true. In fact, Medicaid spending has been slower. In fact, went down. Medicare spending has been incredibly slow. The projections of what it should cost are above what it actually has cost. So on those metrics, it has succeeded. Of course, the metrics I care about are like, you know, does the healthcare system get better? That's what will take years to figure out.
Let me ask you about the blog that you have that says that you wrote this on September 29th at the Incidental Economist. Best in the world? My ass. Yeah. The S's are replaced by dollar signs. Emergency departments and networks. You cannot get away with what you do at CNN when you say, well, I didn't title the article. You titled
I titled that one. I haven't bought the website. I haven't bought that I own the website bestintheworldmyass.com. Someday I got to figure out what to do with it.
Has there been any interest in that domain name?
No, I want to use it. I just don't have time. Oh. Like, I wish I had the time to, like, set up another website. You know, maybe I should just post all of
these. Well, why do you hate America, then?
I don't. I just think our healthcare. Every time somebody says to me, like, we have the best healthcare system in the world, anytime I want to write a piece that goes, really? That's what I call it. Because the New York Times has been doing gangbusters work the past few weekends. They have an ongoing series.
Well, of course you're going to say that you contribute to
the
New York Times.
I would say biased that anyone did it, but they've been having an ongoing series on, like, what's wrong with the way that the healthcare system is working in terms of gouging people, and it's been every week has been like a pull your hair out rage inducing story. This was like the second one in a row. It's just amazing. So there are emergency rooms which are technically in network, but the emergency rooms these days, a lot of them contract out their ERs. In other words, they don't employ the ER docs directly. They pay private physician groups to staff their ER. There have been cases, and depending upon, you know, which story you believe, it's widespread in some states, it appears, where the doctors who are working in the emergency room are actually out of network, even though the emergency room is in network. So you have a case where somebody is injured, where somebody's acutely ill, and they even do the due diligence, which is already insane, to make sure that the emergency room that they're driving to as quickly as possible is in network. And when they get there and they sign the forms and they get taken care of, it turns out the doctor's not in network and they get billed out of network huge charges, which they can't fight, and they get screwed, even though they went to the hospital that's in network.
That would be
crazy.
The one of the things that people really miss is that the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, was more than, correct me if I'm wrong when I say more than anything else, regulations for insurance companies to follow. But the why couldn't you have a regulation that solves this problem that says if you go to a hospital, it's in your network, you know, that's crazy.
That would require a new law, though. Who's going to pass it? You think Congress is going to pass it? Like, really?
Could a law do the trick?
Sure.
That you can't do that?
Sure. You can even have a state.
And who's doing that? The doctors are pulling that off? It's a doctor's thing or an insurance industry
of course,
thing? Or a hospital thing?
I got tons of hate mail from ER docs who were like, that never happened. Of course, well, it does happen because there's a story. We can debate about how widespread it is, but it's absolutely happening. One of the great anecdotes that they had in the New York Times was a doctor's daughter got screwed by this, and he went ballistic and tried to fix it himself, and it was like, couldn't do it. They took her to like Bryn Mawr Hospital, which happens to actually be near where I grew up. But the ER doc was out of network. The daughter got a huge charge, and when the doctor tried to fix it, there was no avail. One of my points was like, if a local doctor can't figure this out, you've got no chance. You're just screwed. Like, you just better hope. You're rolling the dice that when you even try to go to the in-network doctor, the in-network hospital, you're going to get an in-network doctor. But you know what? Last week's story was just as bad. That one was talking about that, you know, people who went in for operations and their surgeon was in-network, but in the middle of the procedure, the surgeon gets help from a different doctor who's out of network, who then charges you $100,000. And again, what are you going to do? You have to pay it.
But couldn't you wake up and say, couldn't you wake up and be like, oh, hey, are you in network? And they should have certain.
Were they supposed to in midstream? It's like, and, you know, the doctors will say, well, I needed this expert or I needed that expert. But how can you judge? How do you know? And so even if you do all the due diligence in the world, what are you going to do? How do you avoid this? How do you get around? It's just there are so many
Keith
ways
is,
to go. For our
Keith in New Jersey is calling and saying and tweeting that just happened to his wife.
Well, okay, good. You can respond to some of the ER docs to tell me this never happens because it's amazing. I mean,
you're hearing from a lot of ER.
And, of course, even then when I respond, if you go to the New York story, it's pretty widespread in Texas. And then they go, oh, well, it's just Texas. It's like, well, okay, so how widespread does it have to get before you call it widespread? One doctor was screaming at me that I was like, I don't know. But
what was he saying? I want to know. How dare
you? He just was accusing me basically. He said, what number is widespread? And I'm like, I don't have a number. Mm. I just think if it's occurring in all of Texas and they can find anecdotes everywhere and it's entirely possible and they report on it and say it is widespread, I'm going to trust that it is widespread and you should take up that issue with the New York Times and not necessarily with me. But regardless, the fact that it's occurring at all is a problem. The system.
These people that are attacking you, do they know that today is your birthday?
Well, that was yesterday. So I don't think anyone's going to attack me yet today. So all
today
game,
is Aaron's birthday, at Aaron E. Carroll. If you're not following him, that's a nice birthday present. If you are, tweet him and wish him a happy birthday. I'm seeing a lot of mentions from our listeners right now. I hope you replay and on-demand folks will come through. Dr. Aaron Carroll joins us and takes your calls and questions.
It's also
like you may get a
triage.
Pie.
It's Healthcare Triage's first birthday today as well.
Look at you, plugging away.
First
Healthcare Triage is on YouTube, the videos. Your latest one is about diets, which ones work for losing weight and keeping the weight and keeping it off. Oh, I just started playing it on my computer. Sorry. This is easy. None.
No, they all do. No, it's the opposite. They all work.
Oh, they all work. Yeah. I knew it was a trick question.
Don't panic about it. Whichever one you want to use, whichever one you're going to keep, whichever lifestyle change you're going to make and be committed to, that's the one that works best for you.
Do you focus on, when you're strength training, your arms with these videos in mind? Because your arms are looking good, and you always seem to wear a short sleeve.
No, I don't, but I appreciate the compliment. Thank you.
You don't do buys and tries one day?
Oh, no, I do, but I don't do it thinking I need to look good for Healthcare Trios.
I think you do.
I don't.
I think you're on camera all the time now, and I think you're taking really good care of yourself because
I try to take care of myself all the time anyway. But today I do it for Healthcare Triage. I do it for me.
Oop, I just heard an alert. Was that another birthday wish from a listener?
It looks like it was. Yeah.
Look at that. Who do you want to give credit to on that one?
Susan Horton.
That last one.
I talked about Susan Horton and Eugene Zdral. It's a Zdral.
Wish him a happy birthday.
Long-time follower, though. I'll give her
And when you do, you can also tweet out one of his projects, his books, his Healthcare Triage videos.
Susan Horton's husband is like a video game artist designer, so super cool. Worked on that.
She's a listener of mine?
Yes. Super, and he worked on
ours.
Great game. It's awesome.
Oh, cool. All right. Thank you, Susan. Thank you, Aaron. Happy birthday, pal.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Will you'll be in studio the whole show on Monday. So looking forward to that.
Awesome.
And seeing you in New York. All right, buddy. Thank you. Thank you to all of our guests, Gordon Chang, Harlow, Giles Unger. Hope you liked the history segment on John Marshall. Be the change you want to see. We'll talk to you right here tomorrow on Stand Up.